Community Matters, solutions to local issues and leaders who are making a positive difference.
Good morning, it's Megan from The Morning Show on Your Encouraging WPER, and welcome to another edition of Community Matters. This week we have a couple of interviews for you. In our first interview, we'll be talking with Grace Whiting with National Alliance for Caregiving and Susan Reinhard with AARP. And we're going to be talking about the role that family caregivers play in our society and also some challenges that they are currently facing, specifically due to the coronavirus pandemic, but also just in general, being a family caregiver, it does present in itself many challenges. So Grace and Susan, welcome to the program. I'd love it if you could both start out just by introducing who you are, your role with the organization, and what your organization does.
So I'm Grace Whiting. I'm the president and CEO at the National Alliance for Caregiving, which is a nonprofit coalition based in the Washington area. And we do public policy research on caregiving as well as advocacy.
And I'm Susan Reinhard. I'm a senior vice president at AARP, the Public Policy Institute. And I think you are probably familiar with AARP, with about 38 million members and providing lots of resources.
Fantastic. Well, welcome both to the show. And I actually just wanted to ask you, so we're seeing then that there's a new study that's showing that family caregivers are finding themselves in poorer health and that they're feeling the financial strain of having to provide family care. And so I just wanted to ask for a quick definition. What do you define as a family caregiver?
We look at family caregiving as a very broad definition. It includes family members, but also neighbors and friends. People that are helping another person, that could be a parent, a spouse, some other person that has needs, either from chronic illness or a disability of some sort. And they're helping them with everyday kinds of tasks as well as personal care. So that's a lot of different things you could be doing. It often starts with transportation, driving someone to the doctor's office or physical therapy, managing finances, scheduling appointments, which can often take all day, my father-in-law used to say, shopping, bathing, helping people get dressed, toileting, that's the personal care part. And then about half of family caregivers do more than that. They do things that healthcare professionals, nurses in particular, have done over the years, many different kinds of medications, including injections. It could be wound care, special diets, different kinds of equipment they're dealing with. So they have a lot of different things that they might be helping this person with. And by the way, some of them are helping about one in four, I think, are helping more than one person. So
oh, wow.
A lot. So we think of family caregivers as the backbone of the healthcare system and the long-term care system, that they are doing an enormous amount of work, not just for the person they're caring for, but for society as a whole. And we always like to remind people that most of us will either be a caregiver or will need a family caregiver sometime in our lives, and probably both.
Absolutely. Now, who do you find then, in your experience, is primarily serving in that role as the family caregiver?
Well, there's really no one-size-fits-all. You know, I mean, typically when we talk about caregiving, we think about a woman who's in her late 40s who's providing care to someone else. But the reality is that almost every generation, every background, every income level is impacted by caregiving. So we see folks all the way from Gen Z to the Greatest Generation who reported being caregivers in this study. And we also, one of the interesting findings was that 60% of caregivers were non-white. So as America gets increasingly diverse, we see a greater number of caregivers are African-American, Latino, or Asian-American, Pacific Islander. So there really isn't, you know, your typical one. And I think, if anything, it reflects the diversity and, you know, sort of the patchwork collection of Americans.
So I did see from the new study then, the bullet point, if you will, that 9.5 increased, family caregivers increased by 9.5 million over the last 5 years, 2015 to 2020. So I wanted to ask you, do you envision that number increasing exponentially because of this current coronavirus situation that we're in right now?
Well, that's a very good question. And the National Alliance for Caregiving and AARP has conducted these studies since the 90s, and we do it every 5 years or so, so that we can track changes over time. So we never know, of course, but it does seem likely with the aging of the population, with more people living with disabilities, that we are likely to see more caregivers, certainly a greater need for family caregivers. We always are concerned about how many people can step up and take on this job. It really is another job.
Well, and I'll just add to that, one of the challenges is that we saw in this report that more people are caring for longer, for 5 years or longer, and more are caring for people of multiple care needs. So to Susan's point, it's not just that we've got more people, but it's also that people are doing more than maybe in previous generations. So the need for support, especially during this pandemic, is just really critical in order to support this unpaid network across the United States.
Do you think that the number of people that they are caring for, in addition to the length of time increasing for how long they're taking care of them, do you think that that is one of the primary factors behind the poor health and the financial strain that they're experiencing as the family caregiver?
Well, they do say that. Family caregivers will say about one in four family caregivers do say that it is harder to take care of their own health and that caregiving has made their health worse. So in their own words, they are saying that there's a direct correlation between what they're doing and their own health. And about half of them are saying they have a financial impact to this as well. So they are dipping into their savings or have stopped saving, 28% of them. And they've taken on more debt and using up their personal short-term savings, all of which are danger signs for one's financial well-being for themselves and for the rest of their family, too.
And then in regards to the poor health, you did mention that it's harder for them to take care of themselves when they're taking care of others. So what are some of the situations that you're finding? Like, is there a standard definition of what that poor health is that they're experiencing, or is it just kind of run a bunch of different things?
I mean, one of the questions that we ask, which is a public health question, is essentially self-reported health. And there's been a lot of research that shows that the way that you self-report your health is an indication of how you feel. So I think the fact that people are saying that caregiving, you know, roughly one in five or one in four are saying caregiving made their health worse, that there are people saying that they don't have time to do self-care is a big piece of that. But I also think part of this is not just our research, but others that shows that, you know, it's interwoven. My ability to care for someone and to be a good partner in care also means that I have to be able to take care of myself and to find time for other things in my life. And so that balance impacts the health of both the person who needs help, but also the caregiver who themselves may be getting older, who may have financial needs or other care responsibilities, and sometimes get lost in the mix.
Now, if we could talk about the financial strain a little bit that family caregivers are experiencing. I have this just thought in my head that as we're in this pandemic, you've got hourly workers who may be working on reduced hours, so reduced pay. You've also got a lot of layoffs that are happening, people losing their jobs or businesses closing their doors. So how do you envision the pandemic making that even a greater financial strain on the family caregivers?
Well, our data, of course, precedes the pandemic, and we've described how half of them at that time, before the pandemic, were experiencing this financial impact. So while we don't have data, we have every reason to believe that the experience that is happening more generally across the country would apply to the family caregiving population and increase the strain that they had already been experiencing.
And then for those family caregivers, then you talked about and the need for greater support for them. What are some of the things that National Alliance for Caregiving and AARP are doing for those family caregivers?
One of the things we're doing at NAAC is really trying to think through what COVID-19 means for the support structures, whether that's government support services or regulatory schemes, how it's going to impact the way that we care for each other. So on our website, we have a community statement with several other national caregiving organizations that says, here are the main issues that we see and some resources that can help during this time. So that's one thing. The other thing is we've been advocating to make sure that the coronavirus legislation helps to support family caregivers. So we were encouraged that the CARES Act had additional funding for the National Family Caregiver Support Program. But we were a little frustrated that the Families First Coronavirus Act that extended paid sick days and paid leave leaves out caregivers who may not have access to dependent care coverage because of COVID-19. Mm-hmm. So if my dad has dementia, not COVID, but I can no longer take him to adult daycare or have a home care worker come into my home, and now I have to telework, I don't get any job protection under the COVID-19 legislation. And that's a place we've been advocating. And I think Susan can speak really to a lot of the great resources that AARP has, particularly for families and coronavirus.
So AARP does a lot of policy work, often in collaboration with Grace's organization and others, but we also are a consumer-facing organization with about 38 million members. So we have, over years, we've been creating resources and sharing what others have done on our website, aarp.org/caregiving. And so there's general resources like free tip sheets and articles and all kinds of things, financing and how to have conversations with a family member that shouldn't be driving anymore, for example. But we also have an online support community. And with the coronavirus, many resources, like how to have a corona action plan. What does that look like? Questions you should ask a nursing home if your family member is there. We are soon to put one out around home care, different fact sheets. So we have, I can tell you that we have lots of people at AARP and across the country. You know, we have offices in every state. So at the very local level, many people are working on trying to get information up on this website to make it available for people who are seeking solutions.
Perfect. And I don't want to take up too much more of your time, but I do have one question that I'd love to ask. In regards to the community, is there anything that we can do to help support the efforts of NAC and AARP?
Well, I'll just say getting the word out as you're doing is terrific, because so many times people don't know where to go. They often don't even think of themselves as a family caregiver. And so it's like, you know, you have a frog in water and you put the flame up higher, and you, before you know it, you are really in hot water. We really would like a prevention approach for people to seek help, ask for help, ask your other family members to help them. And if you know a family caregiver, which you probably do, you know, with all these millions of people, go ahead and ask them what you can do for them. And the more we do that at the local level and support each other, the better off everyone's going to be.
I would just add to that, and maybe this is a nerdy answer, but you know, people with experience, I think they sometimes find a lot of helpful information just looking in the research and understanding that people are working on this, not just in the short term, but the long term. One of the great reports that Susan and her colleagues work on is actually a long-term scorecard that looks at long-term care across the U.S. and has information about states, and that's coming out later this year. And so, you know, research like this study, like the studies AARP Public Policy Institute does and other caregiving experts in the field, it really helps make the case for why families need support and puts it in that language of policymakers and other innovators to get them thinking big about what we're going to do to support America and particularly family caregivers.
Perfect. Well, Grace and Susan, I know that our time is short. I know that you've got other interviews to run to. So I just want to personally thank you for your time and for enlightening us about the work that NAC and AARP are both doing.
Well, thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah, thank you so much.
And for our next interview this morning, we're talking once again with Marcy Fairbanks of Capital Caring Health, specifically about older Americans and how we as a community, even though we are socially distancing, how we can stay more emotionally connected with them, especially since many of them do live alone. So good morning, Marcy. I'd love it if you could just start out just by giving us your name, your title, the organization, a little bit about what Capital Caring Health does.
I'm Marcy Fairbanks, the Director of Family Services with Capital Caring Health. And we are primarily a hospice organization that also offers palliative care services And our new service line includes primary care at home services as well.
Now, I understand that we're going to be talking a little bit today about particularly Americans who are living at home alone and how we can kind of help keep them socially connected and engaged in a world where we're all staying socially distanced. So I just kind of wanted to get a feel from you. How prominent is those who are living alone? Are there a lot of people within our communities that are all alone and have no one in the house with them?
Yeah, I would say about a third of seniors are in fact living at home alone. So that's a significant part of our population.
Absolutely. And how have you seen this particular time when we're in the pandemic, everybody's being asked to isolate, and specifically with them being the vulnerable population, how is this impacting them mental health-wise?
Well, it's definitely having an impact across every demographic. We're all experiencing a big adjustment in terms of our world perspectives and our ability to comfort ourselves the way that we were, in fact, comforting ourselves just a few months ago. And I often like to use the term that we are physically distancing and not, in fact, socially distancing,
right?
Because we're all social creatures of habit. And so in this new reality, we really need to maintain physical distance for safety measures, for ours as well as everyone else's, but we need to be socially connected. And so looking for creative and innovative ways to be able to maintain connection to one another is vital for our health and well-being.
And what are some of the ideas that you have found are helping those who are stuck in isolation? How are you finding ways that they are socially connecting?
Yeah, making an intentional time each day to really connect with individuals, whether it be making good old-fashioned phone calls or texting a loved one, or if you have the technology to be able to do the face-to-face visits through Zoom or other platforms. But really making and carving out that time on a daily basis, whether it be 10 o'clock in the morning, we're going to have coffee with mom and just talk on the phone and talk about where we're at and what's going on in our lives and making that something that's predictable and intentional, I think is very, very helpful.
And for those who are living in isolation, for those who maybe do feel lonely, are there some things that they can do to kind of ease the stress of that situation?
Well, one of the silver linings and one of the blessings in the timing of this experience is that it is springtime, right? And so there's good temperatures outside. The blooms are all around us, and it's a great time to really be able to engage in nature as much as we're capable of doing, whether it be just going out in our backyard, sitting on our porch, watching the birds, whatever the physical capabilities are, being able to connect with nature is also key to maintaining health and well-being, and research has shown is really linked to happiness. So we're strongly encouraging people to take advantage of getting fresh air, getting some exercise, obviously maintaining a healthy diet, and trying to stick to a schedule. It's very easy to get off schedule when, I even find myself sometimes wondering what day of the week it is, because our patterns are disrupted. So really being mindful that, okay, I'm still going to get up at this time, I'm still going to go to bed at this time, and keep some routine. There's comfort in routine.
So talking about then those individuals who may be living at home that don't have family, maybe even friends that they're able to easily connect with, maybe they just don't have anybody. Is there anything that we as a community can do to support them? Is there any way for us to find out who they are so that we can reach those who may be even the most lonely because they don't have family members checking on them?
Well, I think, there's a lot of opportunities within communities. And I know that different church organizations and other community-based organizations are offering opportunities to connect with those who are living alone. It's not an easy answer. You really need to respond to the community that you're living in and be intentional about reaching out to perhaps the clergy to see what kind of opportunities there are within the community specifically. But at Capital Caring Health, we're also offering online support group options. so that people can get connected through the telephone or through Zoom, you know, to be able to navigate some of this new world that we're living in. And then our staff specifically are providing telehealth services as well to help keep those who are involved in our services and engaged with one another and with, you know, with the team that's providing services to them. Because we don't want people to feel alone. We're all in this together.
Awesome. And how is Capital Caring Health funded? Where does your support come from?
Well, the primary bulk of our funding is through Medicare and Medicaid. You know, through CMS, that's where hospice services are primarily paid for, but then also private insurances, cover expenses, and then we're always accepting donations. You know, a large number of individuals that we do provide services to are uninsured, and so our private donors in the community allow us to be able to provide services to even those who don't have insurance.
Excellent. And for those in our community who really do want to learn more about Capital Caring Health, and if there's ways that they can get involved or support in any way, how would they do that?
Absolutely. Our 1-800 number to obtain any information would be 1-800-869-2136, or you can visit our website, which is www.capitalcaring.org.
Excellent. And is there anything else that you'd like to share before we finish today?
Yeah, I would just like to remind everyone that we are the light for each other. And so just really reminding of the power that we all possess to help reach out and help others feel connected and loved and cared for. And every little act that we do helps assist someone else. And that's what this is all about. We're all in this together.
I think that's so key, because you can easily find the division within our society and the different things that are separating us. But if we take the moment to focus on the things that we're all experiencing together and the ways that we can help one another, that really can bring unity in each one of the communities that we live in.
Absolutely. And it helps empower us. You know, there is something that we can do, even when we're feeling, you know, like there's so much that we can't control.
Amen. Could not have said it any better myself. Well, thank you so much, Marcy Fairbanks, again for your time today and for the work that you do with Capital Caring Health. And thank you, the listener, for tuning in today to another episode of Community Matters. As always, you can listen back to these anytime you need right on our website, WPER.org. Have a great day.